The night sky above occupied Palestine was brightly lit with rockets and drones 2 nights ago. However, this time it was not the usual perpetrators of the State of Israel, rather their arch enemy, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Today we're going to go through exactly what happened and how we got into this unprecedented situation in the first place, touching on why each player has reacted the way they have. So, Faris, for those who may be unaware, was this Iranian attack out of thin air or was it in response to something?
No, not at all. In fact, one of the problems was that, you know, of course, we are witnessing history. This is unprecedented. And millions of people around the world were all glued to their phones, to their screens that night. But the problem is that many of those people weren't glued to their screens on April 1st, 2 weeks ago, when an Israeli airstrike destroyed the Iranian consulate in Damascus, Syria. And it's not only that Israel destroyed the consulate, is that it killed 11 to 16 people in the process, including 7 Iranian military advisors, which itself includes 3 senior Iranian commanders.
Well, I guess that kind of begs the question then, is this, or was the Israeli attack then out of thin air then in that case? Was that, or was there a specific reason why they did go for this consulate, this embassy in Damascus?
So there are 2 reasons that Israel attacked the Iranian consulate. One of them is specific and the other is general. The specific reason is that they believed that the consulate was being used as an Iranian military building. And their primary target was an Iranian brigadier general called Mohammad Reza Zahedi. And he was a critical figure in the relationship between Iran and their ally, in Lebanon, Hezbollah, which is a major political party and armed group. But that's a specific reason. But there's also a general reason that I think people need to understand whenever they're looking at Israeli actions against Iran, which is that Israel for years has been wanting an escalation against Iran with U.S. involvement and support so that Iran could be weakened. But of course, Alejandro, we know that we're going to go more into that, into the context later in the episodes.
Absolutely. And I think just to mention, because we also covered it in our episode This Week in Palestine a couple of weeks ago when this did take place, an important distinction to be made after this terrorist attack happened on the consulate in Damascus was that the response from the Iranians, from Khamenei, the supreme leader, was that our brave men will respond. And in the past, this was something which had never really explicitly been mentioned by the Iranians. It was always, there will be a response. And usually these response came through Hezbollah, allies of Iran, basically. Separate groups, but allies of the axis of resistance. And so for the last 2 weeks, we've been knowing that something was going to happen, but we didn't know when or where or exactly what was going to happen. But actually, just on what I just said, the fact that it did take so long for this response by the Iranians to happen, I guess, was in itself part of the Iranian plan. Let's say it left the Israeli leaders shaking. They had no idea when the Iranian response was going to happen or exactly what they were going to do. They were clueless, really. And then, well, April 13th came around, and in the early hours of the morning or in around the afternoon, we saw the first developments happening, not in Israel, but very far away in the Persian Gulf. Faris, can you begin to explain what happened?
Of course. So on April 13th, in the early hours of the day, the Iranian Navy actually seized an Israeli-linked cargo ship in the Strait of Hormuz. If you don't know where that is, that's fine. But it's one of the most important shipping routes in the world because of how much oil, gas, and other essential resources pass through to be traded. And it leads from the Persian Gulf into the Indian Ocean. And so it was seized near Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, just a few days after Iran had actually threatened to close this shipping route, if it deemed it necessary.
And I guess as the news came in of this occurring, we assumed instantly that this wasn't the only response, because that would be quite a pathetic response in retaliation to
very underwhelming
to your embassy being bombed overseas. And so we already felt that as the day would progress, or at least as the following days would progress, that we would see more coming from Iran. And that evening specifically, we saw drones being launched from Iran. And although we knew that a lot of these drones are very slow and that they would take a while to get to Israel, which led to a lot of people thinking, like, what is actually going on? Because this seems useless. We will get onto it later and how this was part of a bigger coordinated attempt to take down the Israeli defense, air defense systems. And as these drones were launched, we saw the Iranians release a statement saying that they were, or citing Article 51 of the UN Charter, which states the inherent right of the individual or the collective to self-defense, basically. And so they were citing this previous attack from the Israelis on the embassy in Damascus. But what do we know about the actual operation? What were the Iranians targeting? What did it include?
So the actual operation in and of itself consisted of several barrages of drones and cruise missiles being launched in the across several hours. And there were various targets across the south of occupied Palestine, as well as around occupied Jerusalem and in the north. Now, the vast majority of these drones, or at least a very, very, very significant portion, were actually intercepted before they struck Israel. And they were intercepted by the US, UK, and Jordan, largely over Jordanian territory. And this was quite a surprise because Iran had warned the United States to actually stay out of the matter and not intercept any of its projectiles. Otherwise, the US could face an attack on its own troops across the Middle East.
And I think that's an important point to specify, because as soon as the final barrage of missiles and drones were sent from Iran, they immediately released a statement saying the matter can be deemed concluded. They had officially concluded their response to this initial attack from Israel on the Iranian embassy in Damascus. This was a very coordinated attack. They did not want this to escalate. They sent a message to the Israelis, and that was that. But one thing I also wanted to touch on was, I mean, you mentioned it a tiny bit. You said how a lot of these drones didn't even make it to occupied Palestine in the first place. They were shot down. But the key point here is that they were able to trigger the Israeli air defense systems. And so with these incredibly cheap drones that Iran has thousands of, they only used a small proportion and they were able to trigger the entire defensive systems from that the Israelis use. And with that defense system triggered, they were then able to use other cruise missiles, ballistic missiles, to then hit their targets, as you said, in military bases in the south and in the very north. What this I guess means is that with, as I just said, very little, very cheap munitions, very basic munitions that the Iranians use, they now have a mapping, a blueprint of how Israel would defend itself in case of, let's say, God forbid, a regional war where they will have to use their more high-tech equipment. And I mean, if we kind of go into some of the numbers of all of this, in total, it's presumed that just over 300 projectiles were launched from Iran. The Israelis say they managed to intercept 99% of them, which would mean that only three or four, maybe five, managed to actually get through Israeli defense systems. But simply through videos, through video footage, friends that sent me videos from the West Bank, we know that that's just not true, basically. We know that a few more.
And of course, it's not just your friends. It's also, you know, verified footage shared by news outlets. but sorry, you were saying, Alejandro.
Yeah, no, of course. My friends are the most reliable sources in the world. but yeah, simply through, well, all forms of media sources, we got to see the image quickly that this was just not true, what the Israelis were saying. But on the other half, on the other side, we did have people say that this was incredibly successful in that tens, if not even almost 100 rockets got through. That's likely also not true, just because that would mean that almost every missile managed to hit and every drone didn't. And that's just simply not possible, really. It's not a plausible result.
And I think notably, two targets that were struck were two Israeli bases in the south, in the Naqab desert. One of them is the Nevatim air base, and the other one is a military airport. And they were both struck, and one of them was substantially damaged. And it also, I think it's also important to highlight what was happening on the Israeli side during this time. The barrages started coming out slowly, and the Israelis were anticipating an Iranian retaliation in this coming period. And so they had closed their airspaces to commercial flights. They shut down their main airports. And once the Iranian retaliation started, Netanyahu, the prime minister, and much of his cabinet, they actually went underground into a bunker. And many Israelis across Palestine were instructed to take shelter in bomb shelters, but most notably in the north and in the south. Those in the center of the country, for example, near Tel Aviv, they weren't instructed to do so. But I think the reason this is also important to highlight is because it does reveal the extent of insecurity and instability that Israeli society and politics felt in general.
And I think that's mirrored by, well, we mentioned it in our broadcast on Instagram, the fact that in over 700 locations, air sirens were triggered, telling people to go into the bunkers, into safety, into shelters. This, what would appear to be such a tame response almost from the Iranians, it wasn't meant to cause much damage. It wasn't meant to kill people.
But it's also worth mentioning that the cost of the Iranian retaliation was 10 times less. It's estimated 10 times less than what Israel had to spend to use its defense and interception systems, which cost well over $1 billion. And so there is also that front of trying to drain Israel of financial and military resources, which also, of course, has an impact indirectly on Gaza. But that is a topic for another time.
And it's probably also just worth mentioning quickly that at the same time, or shortly before the Iranian barrage, there was a barrage from Hezbollah from the Lebanese side of the border that went into northern occupied Palestine, something which has been going on for a long period of time, but significant because it was another big barrage of rockets. And well, I guess we'll get into the context in a moment. But first, we should maybe talk about a bit about the responses from Iran, from the world, I guess, as well, we were all, as you said at the beginning, we were all glued to our screens with what was really such an unprecedented situation. Do you want to quickly touch a bit first on some of the responses within Iran?
Sure. Something noteworthy, actually, was that Iran, within a few hours of initiating the retaliation, permanent mission to the UN actually tweeted saying that their operation was over, which is not something that governments tend to do very often. And that, I think, it signals a message that they wanted to send to the Israelis and the Americans and tell them, listen, we're not going to go all out. We're not going to attack more. This is our retaliation, a measure of self-defense for what you did to us, and we're keeping it limited and proportionate. And so afterwards, as they started doing an evaluation of the operation, the Iranians stated that they believed the operation was even more successful than they had expected. They are still gathering intelligence on the damage caused, and they warned the U.S. To not get involved. And in fact, this seems to be a rare point of agreement with the U.S., which later, just a few hours later, told Israel that it will not be partaking in any future attack on Iran if Israel chooses to escalate or chooses to re-retaliate, so to speak.
We should maybe quickly mention on that note, though, that they have still said that they will defend Israel unconditionally. Their brotherhood is ironclad, or what's the new, I don't know if that, yeah, I think that's the new word that they're using to describe their relationship. Beautiful imagery. but on another note, what seems to be another beautiful friendship blossoming is between Israel and Jordan, in that what became, or what was very unexpected to a lot of us, I would say, was that Jordan actively partook in the defense of Israel as these drones and as these missiles were flying overhead on their way into occupied Palestine. This is something, as I just said, nobody was really expected. And it's a very dangerous line to walk for the Jordanian government, because at the end of the day, there is a very significant proportion of the population with Palestinian roots. And we've seen, we've covered in our This Week in Palestine episodes in the past few weeks, people have been taking to the streets for around the last 3 weeks in protest of this. And, well, the response is that the government doesn't want to listen and that they just want to continue their special relationship with their neighbors.
Absolutely. And Jordan, in fact, directly responded to Iran, actually, by summoning the Iranian ambassador to essentially say that no Iranian projectiles are allowed to pass through Jordanian airspace. And it was diplomatic dressing down, which was also a more stern stance than many people expected.
And, well, I guess the final response that really matters here is that Israel has already promised to respond. It probably won't happen in the next couple of days, but we could see another escalation, another level of conflict between these two nations, or we could see the heat turned up very soon.
Absolutely. Again. And that's something that brings the region closer and closer to regional warfare, which actually brings us to, I think, our next section, because the prospect of all-out war across the region is at the very heart of the decision-making of all these different groups. For Iran, of course, it understood that a direct strike on Israel is completely unprecedented and, of course, risked escalating regional tensions. It's not only the first time that Iran has ever struck Israel directly, but it's also the first time any state or any military has directly struck Israel since 1992, I believe. And so the question is, why did Iran do this? And to understand that, you need to put yourself in the shoes of the Iranian government on April 1st, the day that Israel struck and struck its consulate in Damascus and killed up to 16 people. Iran at that point had already been exercising restraint for several months, because this wasn't actually the first time that Israel had struck an Iranian target. They've been striking Iranian assets across Syria and Iraq, as well as Lebanon, for the past few months since the beginning of the Gaza genocide. But Iran had showed restraint because it didn't want to escalate it into a regional war that could potentially involve the US, which it believed was detrimental to its interests. And so it didn't want to respond too strongly. And that's why, for example, that might explain why we didn't see any Israeli casualties caused by this Iranian retaliation. But on the other hand, Iran also couldn't not respond, or it couldn't respond too weakly. Because if so, then Israel would see that there is no price to pay for attacking Iran, and it would see it as weak, and it would continue attacking the region. And actually, it could potentially escalate regional warfare even faster if Israel went unchecked.
And so clearly that just demonstrates that this is something that Israel has tried to ignite. It's something that they've been pushing Iran, or they've been attempting to push Iran into a corner for a while now, trying to trigger this regional war where then the US would have to come in with them to protect them and to then finally get rid of their arch enemy. But as we've discussed already, I think it seems to be that this response was very measured. It was very calculated. It was very proportionate given what had happened. And the fact that they had already been in contact with the Americans indirectly saying, don't get involved, this is all we're doing, that's that, means that I think for now it seems like they've walked along the line very well, at least to this stage. But who knows? We'll get onto it in the next episode where we speak a bit about the implications, as we've said. But we'll see how Israel responds with this. It's possible that they will just go all out, as always. But I guess all of this needs to be put into perspective and into context where we look at the Israeli state for what it is and the geopolitics of the entire region in that case. Let's just quickly run through a bit of the context and to why Israel behaves the way it does. What does Israel really want here?
So Israel and Iran have been fighting sort of what is usually called a shadow war or a proxy war, arguably for the last several decades. One of the main root of their disagreement is ideological. Iran is ideologically opposed to the existence of an occupier state, of a Jewish ethno state that is exclusive to one ethnic group in Palestine, and that has informed its decision and its decisions towards and its attitude towards Israel. But to understand exactly why, and of course Israel has responded in kind by trying to weaken and defeat Iran, but so far unsuccessfully. Now, in terms of what do they want from each other, to understand this, you need to understand the resources and relationships that they have. The Israeli military receives significant military funding from the U.S. every single year. They have a wide network of relationships with other countries' militaries and is able to sell and export freely without restrictions or sanctions. Iran has none of those capabilities or, let's say, freedoms. And so the result is that Iran does not prefer a direct, intense, high-intensity conflict or war with Israel because it believes that it will have more to lose than to gain, or it will have more to lose than Israel would. And so Iran's strategy is a slow, long-term, gradual sort of war of attrition that keeps Israel always at bay, that tires out Israel over time, and weakens its leadership and military over time. And that is why Iran is avoiding as much as it can an all-out regional war and would rather preserve its assets across the region to continuously be able to keep Israel in check. Israel, on the other hand, wants a war with Iran. And this is known. This is widely known even by all the Western analysts who love and praise Israel all the time. It is known that kind of this is maybe the main point of disagreement that even Western analysts will have with Israel when it comes to foreign policy. Israel wants a war with Iran, but not just any war. It wants a war with Iran that involves the U.S. Because if it involves the U.S., Israel would guarantee that Iran would be dealt a very significant blow. And it would also, of course, mean that Israel bears less of the brunt of such a confrontation. And so it has essentially been trying to drag the United States into a war with Iran for the last 20 odd years. Now, the U.S., for its own part, just from a resources point of view, politically, going to war directly has not been a popular opinion in the United States in 20 years. And so no American leader wants to actually go to war with Iran or a serious full-out war with Iran. And many of them don't believe there's much to gain. And they think Iran can be contained in other ways, even for Israel's benefit, which Israel, of course, disagrees with.
The one thing I would add to what you've mentioned there is that in this kind of shadow war that you've mentioned, Israel has carried out a lot of assassinations on high-profile Iranians, for example, nuclear scientists. We haven't even mentioned nuclear weapons, which is a big part of this disagreement or conflict between Iran and Israel. Israel doesn't want their nuclear hegemony to be matched by the Iranians. And so as a result, they've been trying to sabotage this program. And in some cases in the US, like we had with Trump, we had a complete opposite policy to his predecessor, Obama, who believed that just trying to crush the Iranian economy and then before leaving, killing one of the Iranian top commanders, Qasem Soleimani, was quite a reckless move, and it nearly did ignite a war between, who would know at this stage, maybe World War III would have already started. But as I've mentioned, Israel has been doing this for a long time in terms of assassinating high-profile figures, and that's what we recently saw in this attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. it's not the only attack that's been happening recently. We've also seen general airstrikes hit Iranian targets within Syria. And even this year, we saw one which killed over 30 people, a lot of them civilians. Israel has been attacking the surrounding countries, which are not friendly to them, for quite a lot of time now. And I think you mentioned before, Iran has had to, up until now, has practiced restraint very well. Up until now, this point where they just could no longer do it because of the level of escalation that Israel had provoked them to.
And of course, when it comes to Hezbollah, many people ask, we can, of course, do whole dedicated episodes about Hezbollah, but the point is that Hezbollah is a prominent ally of Iran in Lebanon. And so whenever regional escalation between Israel and Iran occurs, that, of course, involves Hezbollah and it involves Lebanon.
Israel is, well, I mean, we'll, I guess we'll touch on it in the next episode when we speak about the implications of what has happened in the last few days. Unfortunately, we don't have all the details of exactly what has happened, and so we can't really build our full analysis, our full conclusions as to what may happen next. But as soon as we do, we'll bring that out to you.
And also shout out to everyone who voted on our story on Instagram, because we weren't quite sure if you guys wanted the analysis that we do have now or if you wanted to wait. But a majority voted that they would rather have the context and basics and summary right now, and later on, when it's ready, the analysis. So make sure to check our stories, to engage with our broadcast channel, to be following our Instagram page, of course, if you want to stay in the loop on these things.
And of course, this week there won't be a This Week in Palestine podcast episode because of the scale of what has just happened. We will get back to them in the future, and we urge that you check them out because we already did speak about a bit of the context that we've touched on in this episode. But on that note, we'd like to thank you again for listening to this contextual episode on the recent Iranian retaliation. And we'll be back very soon giving you some analysis on what could happen in the following weeks and months. Thank you and see you soon.